somebody made a statement that fatigues me and tired of all of us. And also a couple other factors we're going to deal with, you know, in this message this morning before we have our discussion. 1 Kings 19 and verse 1, he says that Ahab told Jezebel all that Elijah had done, and also how he executed all the prophets with the sword. And Jezebel sent a messenger to Elijah saying, so let the gods be to me, and more also, if I do not make your life as a life of one of them by tomorrow about this time. And when he saw that, he arose and ran for his life and went to Beersheba, which belongs to Judah, and left his servant there. But he himself went a day's journey in the wilderness and came and sat under a fruit tree and prayed to him, my God, and said, said, arise and eat, because the journey is too much for you. And so he arose and ate and drank, and he went in the strength of that food 40 days and 40 nights as far as Horeb, the mountain of God. And there he went into a cave and spent the night in that place, and behold, the word of the Lord came to him. He said to him, what are you doing here, Elijah? So he said, I've been very zealous for the Lord, the God of hosts, for the children of Israel have forsaken your covenant, torn down your altars, and killed your prophets with the sword. I alone am left, and they seek to take my life. This is a pity party on a massive scale. He's really feeling pretty sorry for himself. Often after a great spiritual victory, there's a sudden weariness and letdown, and even despair. We're totally physically and mentally exhausted. The victory of Mount Carmel, which he thought would yield great fruit, did not move the people at all. One of the things that really destroys an enthusiasm and the faith is disappointed expectations. And so after expecting some great result, and you have this nothing, you can say, well, what would it take? You see, the problem is not the evidence. It's always never the evidence. It's usually the heart. And so, Bill could not bring fire down from heaven. God's fire came down and consumed the altar, the offering, the water, even the stones. The
ride is extremely disappointing and it's extremely exhausting. That's a bad combination. That is a bad combination. Elijah had reached his mental and physical and he is beyond the point of a refreshment. And often God will do this. He would take his disciples away for rest. Elijah had been pushing himself hard for a long, long time, and he is just totally spent. And so, over in Psalm 127, it says, maybe to stay up late and rise early, eat the bread of sorrows, because God gives us blessing with sleep. I mean, your body can only take so much, right? And so, Elijah did this totally. So when Ahab tells his lovely wife, Jezebel, what Elijah had done, she sends him a note. He says, may the gods lead me even more. I will make your life like the life of my prophets that you killed yesterday. So by tomorrow, you're going to be done. Now Elijah panics. Take a look at the great man and women of God. They're very human. And Elijah doesn't seek to look for it. He just panics. He doesn't express that God is going to protect me. He runs. He has no reserves. He's totally spent. And his fear grips his heart. And it overcomes him. Matter of fact, Samuel had the same response when God says to go anoint someone else to be king. He said, well, wonder if Saul hears about it. He didn't think to kill me. He said, well, tell Saul you're going to make a sacrifice. And we go to that passage in 1 Samuel 16, which was a key passage in my PhD thesis. Faith falters before fatigue and disappointment. They go to Jeremiah, right? Jeremiah says, I've had it. God is result-oriented, but it's His results. That's why James 4, so important, where it says, don't say, I'm going to go to this city, and I'm going to spend this time, I'm going to make money. Everything says, say, if the Lord wills, but our life is but what? Vapor. I thought we had great expectations, so I'm going to react this way, that way, and I know that's never comes about. That's, by the way, that's why it's so important to understand that right is right to do no matter how people respond. It's just right to do. And the Lord is the one that does these things. It's right to do. And so, here, God says over it's a great passage. Psalm 103, 14 says, he remembers what we lost. He remembers what he remembers. We have limits. And he doesn't chastise us for being weak in our flesh. And we get chastised for sinning, but he doesn't, we're weak. My friend, when the Lord was at on earth, it's very comforting to us. He experienced fatigue, right? He experienced thirst, he experienced hunger. He experienced all these human limitations that the human body has because we're finite beings in a fallen shell. Jeremiah pities himself, Elijah pities himself. Elijah leaves his servant behind. And by the way, this is incredible. He ends up in Beersheba, which to me is amazing because Beersheba is the farthest south point of it. it's beyond the Negev, it's beyond the desert. And so in Judah, it's the very last point, is where Abraham had dug a well, which means the well of the Negev, you know, all the way down to the desert. So whenever Israel is talked about the Old Testament, it's from Dan to what? Beersheba. Beersheba is on the cusp of Sinai. When you go to the southwest, you head towards the Sinai, then south of the Shem, towards the east, which is the Arabian Peninsula. And so it's below the Dead Sea. And so it goes all the way back to Kyle, and if we can see how ideal it is, Beersheba has a desert. So he didn't draw a city, he said, no, Christian, he didn't himself, and said, this is it. By the way, it's important to understand this memory of his God, not from a victorious city. Then he said, well, look, God, it's going to get worse. But we're told that. And one of the most common passages dealing with the end times is in Matthew 24, it says, do not concern yourself with this. He said, these things must be. He said, do not lose heart. These things must be. He said, what happened? We're seeing it around us now. Some of the craziest things are coming out of the world leaders and out of the Davos and other places like that. So this is crazy stuff. And yet, this is the way these people think. This is what Satan is driving. So Elijah leaves his servant behind and says, I'm going to go out into the desert. They walk out of the desert 8 to 10 miles, and he finds a broom tree, which probably means three things. Number one, there must be some water there, because the broom tree is actually a juniper. It's kind of feathery type thing. That's what it is. It's a juniper. You see a blue juniper. Just to Red Cedar that took root out here, and you know, by the hole there, that's in the juniper family. That's actually a Virginia juniper. And it's not a broom tree, but it actually made brooms out of all this other stuff, which didn't last very long, but it's kind of in that area of the world. Well, this is just a sign of that area of the world. A broom tree has an important wedding tradition. If a young man wants to proposed to a woman, he goes tied a knot in the broom tree. And he tells her. Now, if she says yes, he ties a knot over his. If she says no, she unties his knot. It was really nice that she takes a grand tuck, but anyway, you know, so the broom tree was known as the wedding tree. But back then, I would say that was probably the tradition. He's under a broom tree, which, by the way, would be a good place to have been if you find a broom tree. It's a lot of shade underneath of these trees and stuff, and so he's under a broom tree. And he's feeling very what? Very sorry for himself. Oh, poor me. Now, we have an interesting passage. I want you to notice the change of article here. The first says, an angel of the Lord comes to verse 7 says what? The angel of the Lord. And that's usually a pre-incarnate form of Jesus Christ. The angel of the Lord comes down. And using it as a pre-incarnate form of Jesus Christ, and he puts a, you know, like a fake make of coals, it's a water. I must have been quite a fake. some here. He makes a good form, goes to sleep. He says, listen, if there's too much for you, he wakes him up again and eats again. Stewards of this body. Matter of fact, 1 Corinthians 6 says this body is what? The temple of the Holy Spirit. You can't do anything spiritual without not in the body, because that's what we are now. We live in this body. And if you mistreat the body, you're not going to accomplish anything spiritual. We are body, soul, and spirit. We are one. And one day we'll get a glorified body. So we got to take care of the best we can. It's full of human frailties. It's full of deterioration. And if you're going to serve the Lord, you're going to be serving the Lord in this body. And you need to take care of this body, you know, so that you can serve the Lord more effectively. And so you know, light is slowly drained. I mean, you notice that the Lord doesn't criticize it for that. It's the fact that we are one of the things when he's there for the Lord, he's going to evaluate how would you take care of the body. By the way, you only get one of them. You ever notice that? You only get one. You can't go back and say, I want to try this again. You know, you only get one of these things. And so here we are. So we're responsible, and we're responsible to get enough for us. You got cringed every time. You grow up in the tradition where, you know, mention is, I think, the particular thing, like, I couldn't have you. This is not where I told you to come. This is not where I want you to minister. It is, see what I'm doing. You know, God had not directed to come to him. And quite often, you know, in our lives, when we quit or we do not courage, you know, the Lord basically said, well, you know, tough, right? Well, it's not the time to quit. It's not the time to get up. Not the time to get frustrated. We might feel that way. With faith, means that we got through. I mean, I think one of the greatest testimonies of that is Job, right? I mean, just, and you think we would have collapsed long before that, right? Daniel, you know, those pictures you see of Daniel. Children's pictures where he got landed, and he's in his 80s. You know? So he's pregnant. And it's incredible when you see Daniel and Daniel chapter 10, you don't realize this guy is in his 80s. And he's 3 weeks fasting to get an answer from God. And what man? What faith? And so here we have. He goes down and he doesn't wait a minute. And then we had a conversation with God, which we're going to take a look next week. It's just amazing. He said, I didn't call you down here. You know, the God could have answered Elijah's prayer up in Samaria. Well, if he could have traveled all this distance down to Mount Hermon. Now, notice Elijah's three complaints. Oh, and look at this week. Before we get to our discussion. First of all, Israel has forsaken God and has killed the prophets. Now, I always wondered when I read this, is those 100 prophets in the cave, if they're still there. Israel, they've killed the prophets. Well, you're not telling God anything, right? Okay. Number two, I just say, and that's a word of pity party, because I'm the only one left. By the way, if you're the only one left, it's more important for you to look. Shine the light, right? You know, Isaiah 57:1, if one could own the land, wouldn't the man's taken out the land? You know? But God's turning down, and they bought under 7,000 of them. This is what's important. When we feel like we're the only ones left, we're not. There are others. Secondly, we have a promise. Elijah didn't have that written down. We have a promise over in Matthew 28, lo, I'll be with you. Always. Even back to the end of the day, I'll always be with you. We're never alone. Our focus on our problem, woe is me, and this is happening, and this is wrong, and this is bad. We're in trouble. That's where the depression is. That's where the faith begins to falter. That's where she has a line to, I'm not anyone left. I mean, I don't know why. I don't know why. Because in the end, I'm just the last one. Now, the reason why he feels that he has failed. Look what he says here. He says, I'm no better than the fathers. I'm no better than anyone who's come before me. Well, isn't that the point? The Lord takes us frail and weak and everything else and uses it. We aren't any better. Isaiah discovered that on Isaiah 6. So, well, it's now not done. I'm a man of unclean lips and a whole land of men of unclean lips. That's who we are. Is it surprising that sinners what will you let me? Okay? So he complains that Israel forsaken God, they killed the prophets, he complains that he's the only one left, and then finally he complains, oh, by the way, they're trying to kill me. Well, that should not be a surprise to Amos. Shuts up. Get us out of the way. People hate God, they're going to hate the messengers of God. That's what Jesus told his disciples. If they hate me, as your master, what do you think they're going to do to you? Why hate you as well? I end for another discussion here. Just by saying, we're never alone. We feel like we're never alone. The Lord is always with us. And so we feel that way. That's the time. And it's kind of like here again. We can begin the Word of God. We worship right. We praise. We continue to serve. Because we are not alone. And one more thing before I pray here. Listen. Whatever we go through, to stand.